Mr. Gormley, Rail 12. We're now into your first station at Fenham Barracks. You did a certain amount of drill, as you said, and then, of course, you had all this work with horses and GS wagons and so forth. What else were you doing there?
Well, there was always lots of sport in the area, right? There was always something going on, and it's difficult to try and realise exactly how much was going on. I mean, we were training, to go down and do the very last episode of a pageant at Ravenswood Castle. And I was lucky enough.
What year would this be we're talking about?
1935. And, 36. Beginning of 36, we were, I was lucky enough to be chosen as a Whig driver, and we were driving a carriage bringing Napoleon back from Moscow in this tattoo held at Ravenswood Castle. And I can always remember it because many years before, as a young boy, I'd walked over from Newfield and went to see a tattoo in Ravenswood Castle, crept in through the back door, knew we were going to pay to get him back. So, but we knew every inch of the place, and we walked over to there, and I'd seen this tattoo being held there. And then here I am. Years later, I was only a boy about 10, 11 at the time, and years later, I'm in there actually partaking in part of it, and it was the same down tattoo that I'd done years before when I was a boy. But I was actually the wheel driver on the course bringing Napoleon back from Moscow. So that was a little bit of a feather in the cap kind of style. And
you'd have to put in a great deal of training for this.
Oh, yes. You were out there practically every day, you know, going down there in the lovely big grassy sward, and you used to train mainly on the town moor before you went down onto the sward. Like, you know, you should do all the training on the town moor with all the horses and that, you know. Of course, then there was a lot of other things going on as well, in between, you know, other people. But I had the honour of being a Napoleon out back from Moscow, and I always remember because they were doing the Battle of Drop's Drift as well in the same town, and it was amazing. The effect they had on you, because all of a sudden you would see they had this little kind of a cabin built up somewhere, you know, and then all of a sudden there was all these Zulus and with assegais and all just popping up out of the bloody bushes. And it was easy. Although I'd seen it before as a young boy, and I still couldn't get over it, you know. And it was pretty marvellous to watch them people going, ah, yeah, 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 oh.
And big crowds would turn up.
You couldn't get near them because there weren't any seats or anything like that except for the VIPs right at the bottom. Like, there was just a big grassy sward went right up the bank like that. And everybody was just sitting all along this bank, overlooking on the arena down below. And beautiful arena, you know. And they were all hopping about up there. And there was somebody else, and then had another one on with a set of blokes out in the Pacific Islands or somewhere like that, you know. Doing these old fashioned goods and that. That was brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
So that was a special occasion, of course.
Yeah. But,
what guns were you now pulling?
4.5 howitzers.
You're still on the 4.5 howitzers.
I was in the 4.5 howitzer back most of my life before they brought the 25-pounder. Like, you know. Yeah, I went right through many years. I served on a 4.5 howitzer.
Any other memories of what you were doing there?
Well, yeah. We're sitting in the canteen this thing. This Scott McCown, my sergeant. He come dashing in. Right, call me, Reynolds. Caps on, courts on, out. Reynolds, what is happening? Follow me. And the way we shut down it, down the very air market, down in the air market. And we got in there, and this fellow that I'd already mentioned, Dusty Wheeling, who was a bombardier, he pinched the bloody colonel's charger. He pinched the colonel's charger out of the place, out of the stables, and he driven it down to the hay market, and he had all the traffic tied up in the hay market. He's come home and bought, just like me tell you, he's bought another lot. Found this out there later. He's bought none and all, and all around the hay market, all the topic tied up. The one went in, he stood at the bar, the blacky boy, but that's where he was. He had it tied up with a lump on his own side. The blacky boy, there he was, dropping the bar up like his jock.
Did you start training in a fighting capacity, you know, for in the sense of taking your guns and firing them and so forth?
Oh, yes.
This is where this started, was it, when you went to Fenham?
Yeah.
Into a regular unit.
We'll go through Fenham, right, because we've got to go back, we'll go to Rangeley camp.
And this is your training camp?
There, yeah,
no. And was this an annual camp that you went to?
We get busted back to the barracks, like pushing in the very guard room for the night. Like, and I was left to ride, horse. He just had him under escort, and I was left to ride his horse home. And then we got back up to the, got him back into the guns, and he was up in front of the major the next morning, like, the major says, well, I'm not having anything to do it because it was a colonel's charge and he wasn't there to it. So he set him over the colonel like and the colonel says, well, he said, if it had been anybody else's charge but mine, he said, I might have overlooked it, but you can't take him back and make it out of me. He said, busted, bam. He was busted down. He didn't even stop at that point here, but straight down, he's back on the gun again.
Can we come now to your actual training then?
From there we went down to Reedsdale camp. Now this took almost 3 days, if I remember right.
The journey down?
Yeah. It's a long way from your castle down to Bellaby camp, at Catrick. See, well, you've only got horses, you can only go so far. Then you stop, make your wagon lines, because it's all the waste, you know. You stop at certain places, stop, put your wagon lines up, skip out overnight.
And this would be in a field of
some. Oh, yeah, it's just where you were, you know. You didn't even want to put the tent up or anything like that, just to ground it and get on.
Now, what time of the year would this be?
This would be that time about March.
As early as that?
Yeah.
It mustn't have been particularly good weather for you being out without tents.
No, it wasn't really. I don't know, you're young and sick, you don't take them too much to you. I was being out to march, yeah. Because later on we went up and did the firing camp at Ottawa.
And did you have ground sheets and that kind of thing for cover?
Yeah.
And the waterproof?
Yeah, the ground sheet was covered, you know, covered the whole of your body. You know, when you were riding, you go through rain, didn't matter whether it was rain or what, you just go through it, you know. And you just use it to lie on. Right, and then we got to Reedsdale camp. We did about a fortnight stay in there.
And was this a tent?
Bellaby.
Was this a tented or a camp or a permanent camp?
A permanent camp. Yeah. Right up on the top of the hills at Bellaby. because Reedsdale is the one that is Otterburn, actually. I've just got mixed up with it. Bellamy Camp in Catwick. Well, I'd already been there, but it was a down in Lake Hinton many years before.
So you knew the place?
I knew the place.
And you were there for, did you say a fortnight?
A fortnight, yeah.
And what were you doing?
Mainly training. Just basic training, out every day with the guns, and that day, you know, the music there. We didn't know any firing there, because we went up later in the year to Otterburn.
So these were just like manoeuvres without firing? Just
manoeuvres without firing. Mm.
And were you working with infantry or just yourselves?
Yeah, I had all the infantry, like, same as I've already been and done with the infantry, like, you know. It was all part of a big brigade.
And what kind of training exactly was it when you say you were training?
Well, I mean, it's just the same thing as we've been trained for. Actually, we went in, dropped the guns, the gunners went home with the gun gear, etc. But we just wanted to wait for the wagon lines to get ourselves at home.
And was it an infantry support role that you were doing? You were firing, but you were going in.
Yeah. There's no way they could fire over there, like, you know. So we were just more or less, you go through all the motions of firing guns, etc. But you did anything except the exact fire, you know.
And this would be the normal working day of Ravalli through to
just as it would be if you bring in bikes. No difference at all, other than that you were sleeping there. Well, you weren't sleeping up because you were in a nice.
Wooden barrack huts. Yeah. And fired by a stove in the centre, presumably. And in the evening, did you get allowed out again of camp?
Yes, just anywhere, like, you know, unless we had you did have a couple of overnight.
Night manoeuvres,
like, you know, so we had those to do. But other than that, we just made our way down into the local campaigns, you know, and made many of that.
In this training, were you ever put into a situation, say, where your gunners were killed, wounded, and you had to go in and fire, pretend to fire the guns yourself? Or were you always driver and nothing else?
I can't remember that.
No, just a driver and
I was only made believe me. So just,
and this was an annual training event that you did?
This would have been an annual training event, and other than that, we moved later in the year. Yeah. Right. We moved later in the year.
And
before that, we went up to Reedsdale Camp in Otterburn, and we did a proper firing camp up there. And again, it took us nearly 3 days to get there, because, as I say, it was all part of the training. You know, you were doing it, and you were going into wagon lines, and then breaking your wagon lines up, moving on.
When you say wagon lines, how were wagon lines organised?
Well, when you went into wagon lines, you had these posts, which you always took in, and they were embedded in the ground, and you chained your horses up. The struggle line between the horses, and all the horses went down that line and down this line, and that was it.
And then the wagons presumably were in their lines, neatly lined up and so forth.
Well, the wagons were always neatly lined up, ready for so immediately harness up and carry on. But the wagon lines themselves, if you've been static for any length of time. If they weren't, you didn't really bother. You just pegged them down where they were, and that was it. But if you're going to be like we were for a fortnight on the Reedsdale, you had a proper wagon lines made up for the release posts, which were dug into the ground, and then you had the big line that went right away around, and you tethered your horses on there.
And you still had your duties looking after those horses?
Oh, yes, you can't forget horses. They've got to be looked after day and night, irrespective of where you are.
And did you carry in amongst your own supplies, the feeding supplies, etc., for horses?
Yes, you carried all that with you. All came in your gear, so
that must have took up quite a bit of space, you know, for 36 horses.
Well, of course, I mean, if you're going to be there for any length of time, well, I mean, you take so much with you, and then you go to the nearest dealer and get the stuff from them. Or get the stuff delivered for you, eh?
Which you could in peacetime.
Which you could in peacetime. You can't, you know, during the war, eh? I mean, anything could have happened, eh? But,
So, when you moved up to Otterburn, did you say, was that the very first time that you'd actually fired guns? You hadn't fired,
yeah,
but you...
I'd never fired a gun, you know, and even then, we weren't allowed on the guns. Oh, no, we didn't even fire it. We were just there listening to the fire, you know, we just had what I mean. No, so, as drivers, we were more or less told to keep up any mouth out there. Keep our mouth shut and keep out the way.
And presumably you fired at, or you didn't, but gunners fired at different ranges, different types of shells.
Oh, yeah. You see, with a howitzer, you see that it's a very short barrel gun.
It's a very acute angle.
You can point it with a scarf, you can lift one up and over, you know, and they're all high explosive shells on there.
All high explosives on those.
High explosive shells. On impact, they exploded. The others were different. They were more like on a flat subject. You were firing more than the top of the vehicle.
And that was with the guns that did that?
That was 18 pounds, that's what they were called. And I never had any deals with them. No.
And again, was it a fortnight at Otterburn? Or was that that kind of time? What time of the year would you be in Otterburn?
Middle of the summer.
It must have caused quite a stir amongst civilians to have you going down the roads pulling your
your
wagons.
Well, you can see by looking at that, I mean, I know they were all old-fashioned too, but that was exactly the effect that you had when you marched away in little villages and that, you know. They were very curious to turn out to see it. And when I look back, I think, you know, it must have been a marvellous sight for anybody that had never seen it before. Right? See all these 6 horse teams there all pulling up the cars. You felt very proud, you know, I must admit that, like, you know, you're always proud. Well, I was proud of it, I think, you know, sadly. It was brave of you, you know, pride of your regiment.
So you had your two camps, in effect, one in the spring, one in the summer. Was the one in the autumn as well?
No. No, I'll tell you that, because we moved just
after. Oh, so you weren't in Newcastle very long?
No, not even 12 months.
Can we talk a little about the men and the officers that you were now with? You said the colonel was Colonel...
Armitage.
What was he like?
Oh, very nice man. Very nice man. Lovely stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Well, amazing man.
But the Armitage was strict man, was he? Very strict?
Well, he wouldn't be stepped out the line. Oh, yes. But, I mean, not that I had any demons with him. Because I don't know, I must have kept my nose clean. Not like when I got down to the oldest, not like, but I must have kept my nose clean there, because I never got any trouble at all when I was with that.
So, as you say, he was well respected, presumably.
Oh, yes, well, you can imagine the kind of gentleman he was when he said, I'm not having my belief in my tooth. And I mean, he'd only come in off chance, because he happened to come in on a Sunday tea time when he didn't have any lunch. Instead of at tea time, he always had tea, instead of having a later dinner, which he would normally have, he had it about 5 o'clock. And he'd actually come in while he was dishing me something. When he got his eye on, he must have looked at his phone, he looked at his mouth, and he thought,
Do you have any of the memories of him and any particular events?
Yeah.
Well, the major, who was, do you remember his name?
Brown. Baxter.
And what was he like?
Major Waller was a major, and he was a lovely bloke. He was a really, really nice fellow. He let me off. He let me off dozens of times after that. Like, as I say, I must have kept the nose clean. Like, when we got down to the shop, just Captain McCormick, who was a dear of mine.
Well, we'll come to him. So again, he was a well-respected chap.
He was very well-respected. Very well-respected.
But what age were these men? These
looking
two.
Back in retrospect, I would say about the 40s. About the 40s, and then in each succeeding one coming down 4 or 5 years.
So after the major. After the major, who was the next in line?
Captain Cullen.
This was at Newcastle. We're still at Newcastle this moment in time.
Sorry, I've made a mistake there. Scotland. Captain Scotland. Who, in a way, turned out to be, I would say, a bane of my life in one respect, but in another respect, he's a lovely man, a nice bloke. Like, in fact, I was groomed him for quite a long while after that. Like, and he had a string of racehorses, nice string of racehorses. Oh, his father had a string of racehorses, I should say, over there in Scotland. And but his Captain Scott Williams, he was really good man. Yes, very nice man.
Well,
or do you want me to carry on talking?
Well, about you're talking about him, by all means.
Yeah. Well, he's a very strict disciplinarian, very strict. But he was very good with it. Said, and mind, that's in retrospect. Wasn't what I used to call him at the time. But, no, he was very good, and as I say, he had a horse there called Spinette, which was tipped in the whole of the National Press to be the Grand National. And this was a horse I used to ride on, called a Spinette the Fourth. And I've known that many years now. And it was a lovely open jumper, wonderful jumper. And he used to ride it himself, where I used to ride it, all the exercise and all that. And a brilliant, brilliant, most brilliant jumper I've ever seen in my life. But he wouldn't, he did no way that he would let his, allow his horse to be used for the Grand National. That turned it down flat. He used to use it on point to point, but there's no way he'd take it into the Grand National.
The other officers in your troop, do you recall any of those?
Sweet Turner, Big Sweet Turner, aptly named. But he was, he took one look at me when I signed the paper. He said, I shall make a scrum half out of you. I said, I'm the football star. He said, I shall make a scrum half out of you. And he went in and all, and I played for me for years after that, and footballing, but he did. And he was a very nice bloke. I mean, unlike the others, like, he didn't have any money. Well, like, he hadn't any great wealth at all. Like, yes, there was another officer there. He was a very bright man. He had
he owned the big glove company. Anyway, but anyway, I'll tell you about him. His name will come back. If it doesn't, we'll put it in somewhere along the line later on. But he was interested in gliding. Always taking his way out, taking gliders up and whatnot, going down to Farmer and that, taking his gliders and that up in the air and that. And he would phone back, and he would never ever tell you where he was. I'm at such and such, and he'll give you the map reference, and it was up to you, if you were two on the go, right? It was up to you to find out where he was, and how he was, and you would set off in a wagon, and he would go there, and eventually you would find him, and you'd pack all his glider aboard, aboard the wagon and that, right? And then you would always take it to the nearest pub. Soon you got the nearest pub to your right and stop. And he'd treat you the best way you'd ever had in your life, as far as you were concerned, you know. And he'd give you a lovely beer.
And the immediate officers that you were daily dealing with, what were they like?
They were all
the second lieutenants.
They were all gentlemen, and then there was a couple of younger ones who were the sub lieutenants, second lieutenants, and they were all very nice gentlemen. And I must admit, I used all these as a yardstick, because I'd never had any dealings with them or whatever to do with gentlemen at all of any description. And I never had anything to do with them at all. And then I met these Major Miller and Captain Scott Williams. And I wish I could do that correct for this thing.
No bullies amongst them. Nobody that picked upon you.
No. They were disciplinarians. I mean, Scott Williams was a disciplinarian. They were really, really tough. But it was fair. Oh, I don't know. No bullying. I never encountered any bullying at any time. I don't know why, but
but the officers seemed to have come from pretty well-to-do families, weren't they?
They were all well-to-do families. Oh, yes, Scott Williams and all his money. All that we had to do. And, what the heck are these two younger fellas? Can't think of the names now. The remains just stopped on working on that field at the moment.